Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Do you know that there's still a chance for you? Because there's a spark in you. You just gotta ignite the light and let it shine. Just own the night.
Now, I always thought it was funny when, you remember Nate Singleton used to be my producer a long time. You worked with Nate a long time. He was here quite a long time. Nate was my producer at the time. And I remember after I had flown with the Blue Angels, this is with Captain Jeff Koos back at the Homecoming Air Show in November of 2015, today being the 10th anniversary of the crash that took his life. And I will forever remember that hearing the warning noises and the, you know, the voice, roll left. You know, that freaked him out. Like he did not like that at all. And I'm like, you weren't in the jet.
Well, that's what I was just about to ask.
Why
I was like,
that
wait
bother
a second.
You so much, but it just did it. And it kind of, there's all kinds of alerts going off all the time when you're flying, you know, it's warning you of things and telling you things and you kind of want to be like, shh. But it used to always bother him so much that stuff was happening in the background. I'm like, man, I didn't even notice any of that. I noticed that I noticed that it was amazing is what I noticed.
140. We're going to get airborne air, 150, 160. Gear flaps are coming up. We're just going to hang out right above the ground here.
God, this is so awesome.
And that call, 240. 260. 280. All right, you ready?
I'm ready.
Here we go. Ready.
Nice.
So, you know, it's the 10-year anniversary. Smyrna has put out a video honoring Captain Koos and talking about the history of the memorial. I'm going to be talking with Mary Esther Reed, the mayor then and now, in Smyrna coming up next hour. But I thought, you know, what's the best thing that I can do on the 10-year anniversary? We could talk about how sad it was to lose him. We could talk about how it impacted his, you know, the team, his family, his wife, his mom, his brother, his dad, I mean, his kids. But I thought, you know, how would he want to be remembered? I think he wanted to be remembered flying. From a little kid, he wanted to fly, as his mom said. You know, saw the Thunderbirds. You know, they don't say that part. You know, but the Thunderbirds can inspire a kid too, right? And, you know, not everybody who gets inspired by the Thunderbirds grows up to be an Air Force pilot, just like not everybody who gets inspired by the Blue Angels grows up to be a Navy pilot. But, you know, I my favorite, you know, thing for him is just thinking about what he did for a living and what he did that produced his death. And, you know, he gave his life for it. He gave his life for naval aviation and the mission and the country and for thrilling and entertaining the rest of us and doing a very difficult thing that has taken the lives of approximately 10% of Blue Angels aviators, is just doing these maneuvers, right?
We'll do one more here. Are you ready?
Yep, sure.
All right, we're going to do six on this one to the right, and then we'll ease off to four. So just quick one to six, and then ease off to four.
All right.
Ready? Here we go. Squeeze your legs. Take a deep breath. Ready. Hit it. Good. Keep squeezing. Squeeze your glutes. Squeeze your abs.
Oh, man. I'm exhausted even remembering it.
Pulling out. All right. Now you can relax. Nice job.
Thank you.
How'd that feel?
Yeah. It's a trip.
It's a lot of work, isn't it?
It is.
Good workout. You're great, though.
What you're doing is, because they don't use flight suits that have the air bubbles in them the pockets that keep your blood pressure up in your body like the Air Force does, or and even like, you know, the Navy does. Instead, because the sticks are so sensitive, they fly without that. And as a result, you have to do this maneuver that forces constricts all your muscles and keeps the blood up in your brain, basically, so you don't pass out. And if you don't do it right, you do pass out. I did not pass out. I did puke. but I there was one right at the end when we were coming in for the carrier break, right at the end where they come in fast in a tight loop and then land. We did 7 G's, and I saw it. I saw the gray start to go in. You know, I saw that start to begin, and it did not finish, so thank goodness.
All right, Andrew, you ready?
Altitude.
Nice job.
Altitude.
So when would you use that?
We use that every time we come back to land at the aircraft carrier. It's just an efficient means. We orbit overhead the ship, and then when it's time to come in and land, we come down out of altitude, and we come in fast like that, slow down quickly. We land in 1 minute intervals at the ship. 7.0 G's at the brake, by the way. Nice work.
So, like I said, I mean, it was a fantastic experience for me. And I know for everybody else knows him as number 6. I knew him as 7 because he was the narrator when I was flying with him. And then he, of course, passed away June 2nd, 2016 in that terrible crash, you know, in Smyrna. They did Smyrna did a great job of putting up the memorial with the jet. I've been there many times. My stepdad used to live in Murfreesboro. It's a wonderful thing if you've never had a chance to go there. It's a very active site. Like, it's kind of, it's on the edge of one of their major park complexes. And so people are running past it and jogging, and it's right across from the regular airport, which is where the air show was. And it, you know, it's a fantastically done thing. They even have, you know, services there for all kinds of stuff and memorials and commemorations and whatever. And of course, what we did here as a community afterwards was also quite wonderful in the sense it was a terrible day. It was a terrible thing to think about. But then we had the vigil at Veterans Memorial Park, and Matt Siderhound, who had flown with him. I'm trying to remember if he was 5 to Jeff 6. I don't think that's true. I thought maybe it was Ryan Chamberlain was number 5. But anyway, had a very moving speech at that memorial. We'll come back to that in just a second. John Pickens has traffic on the 5s. John?
That's right. We're still rolling accident and delay free, even through those construction zones. I'm not seeing anything that's going to slow you down. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the 5s.
Thanks so much, John. Back to the memorial to remember what it was like 10 years ago when we had lost Captain Coos from the Blue Angels pilot number 6.
I've never done this before, so bear with me, guys. I'm probably going to read it so I don't lose it here. Good evening. My name is Lieutenant Matt Siderhout. I'm Blue Angel number 2. On behalf of the Blue Angels, I would like to thank the city of Pensacola.
This is at the Memorial Park on the 9th of June, so a week afterwards.
On behalf of the Blue Angels, I would like to thank the city of Pensacola and the surrounding community for the truly awe-inspiring amount of support that our team has been shown in the aftermath of this tragic event. It has been both uplifting and humbling. Jeff's passing is a loss, no doubt. But in losing Jeff, we gain inspiration. We gain a guardian angel, a wingman that will always be there. And we gain an ever-strengthening bond between this community and our team. That inspiration and that bond will be the foundation for our future. The time to mourn is now, but when the time is over, when the time is right, we will be back in the skies of this great nation. We will fly like warriors. We will not be scared. We will not have fear because we have Jeff on one wing and we have the city on the other. But before we do that, before we get into the skies again, we will be in the skies of Pensacola, because this is our home and we...
And, you know, his wife speaking, Christina Koo speaking at the time about what it had meant to her, how she was treated by Pensacola and Smyrna, both, frankly, and we should remember what they did as well.
It's June 2nd. It's the town of Pensacola has really wrapped my family in love.
And that she even, you know, the year prior had a chance to go to several shows to go with the kids. So they got to see Dad do what he does, which meant a lot to them and to him.
Packed up the kids and went to 10 air shows last year and made it an experience. That was my mission. And he appreciated that so much, that support, that we were there and making it happen. It certainly wasn't easy or inexpensive, but...
Certainly not easy to do.
The kids and I were en route to Smyrna the day of Jeff's crash. As we pulled into town, that rainbow began to appear. and it became very bright and very full. For me, it was Jeff just saying he was with us, and I've seen a handful of rainbows since, and they're always when I need them most, and I truly believe that he's in rainbows for me.
So, as I say, it was a day that if you were here, you remember vividly, you remember all the follow-up and thereafter. If you're new to town or if you've, you know, weren't here at the time, yeah, hey, you know, maybe you didn't experience it, but that's why I'm talking about it, because 10 years later, major event for the Blue Angels, for, you know, Naval Aviation, and obviously for the towns of Smyrna and Pensacola. And I had already learned what Pensacola was by this time. We'd been here, you know, about 2 years. But this cemented it forever in my mind that we're a town that cares and prays and remembers and honors and loves our men and women of the military. 619 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
There are a lot of questions about roof replacement in the news lately, such as insurance companies demanding replacement before they cancel coverage to companies not doing the job that they sold to you. Make sure you tune in to the Pensacola Expert Panel this Thursday at 9:30 as Quality Roofing Solutions will answer your questions. Find out what makes Quality Roofing Solutions the premier contractor in Florida this Thursday at 9:30.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Here's the tale of the daily med fill. Same old pharmacy, same old bill. But those prices kept rising higher still.
Till the savings wrangler rode in, cool as can be. Tap Good RX, saving massively.
No plan? Don't matter none. Up to 80% off. Deals are done.
Discounts hitting harder than Ma's chili. Dang. That one little lab does all the rest.
Save time and money on prescriptions.
Check Good RX. Good RX is not insurance.
Making the wrong choice can be very costly. Choosing the wrong plumbing company can cost you a lot of money. Hi, I'm Judy Lacey with Barbary Plumbing, and we've been repairing Pensacola's plumbing problems for over 50 years. We are the local originator of the flat rate pricing system, so you don't have to pay by the hour, and there are no surprises. When you need a plumber, make the right choice and call Barbary Plumbing. We will make your plumbing great again.
License number RF11067749.
Hi, I'm Terrence A. Gross. As many of you know, I am a local board-certified personal injury lawyer, and I have practiced in this community for almost 40 years. Our law firm handles only people that have been injured due to the negligence of another. Join me this Wednesday at 10:30 on Pep Talk as we discuss all aspects of personal injury law.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
ADX Digital Lead, Brian Prowitz.
As a business owner, you want less to worry about. You want proven, simple concepts and tools that just do what they said they will do, and proof that those tools work. Well, that's ADX Digital. Simple digital concepts that move the needle for your business. Reporting that proves the results and market-leading customer service. And that's what we do.
No one does digital like ADX Digital Marketing. ADXDigitalMarketing.com.
When breaking news hits, we're there to cover it. Fox News, WER-TV, News Radio team on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Good morning, Angels.
Good morning, Charlie. Look, from all of my adult life, the Republican Party has been defined by a commitment to a conservative agenda. To America as leader of the free world, to limited government, free market economics, and traditional moral values, especially the right to life. And I'm proud to say that that from the Reagan administration to the first Trump administration, we governed on that agenda. But I wrote What Conservatives Believe because just in the last 4 or 5 years, there's been a rise of what I call the populist right. That focuses more on what we're against than what we're for, focuses more on grievance than a positive conservative agenda.
Yeah, it's a really interesting thing to hear Mike Pence talking on Meet the Press on Sunday about, or sorry, Face the Nation on Sunday, the CBS, not the NBC. And talking about where the party is, he's got a book out. He thinks in an election year we ought to maybe think a little bit about what our values are, because he's not wrong. The populist right, the kind of the which Trump absolutely capitalized upon in order to become president, is quite a bit different from what you'd call traditional conservative right or conservative Republicanism. You know, Mike Pence is a great example of traditional conservatism. Trump has kind of managed to not alienate traditional conservatives enough to get them to vote against him, either with his antics or with his politics. But he has certainly captured a group of people, you know, or appealed to, maybe is a better way to say, capitalized upon a group of people who does fit that populist right model. And that's, you know, one of the concerns that Pence has.
The conservative movement has always been battling politically with the progressive left. But now there's a new threat on the populist right that would embrace policies of isolationism abroad, that would embrace big government and protectionism at home, marginalize the right to life. And as we go into this fall's elections and go into 2028, I thought it was important that we take a moment as a party and as a movement to remind ourselves what we believe.
Yeah, and within the Republican Party, Trumpism is absolutely winning right now. Any leader who steps out of line, you know, gets it in the face or loses in the primaries. And so, you know, the primary vote is definitely controlled by the people who are more on the populist right, pro-Trump, MAGA side, however you want to describe that. Not by people like me or Mike Pence. But, you know, that's part of the frustration and the challenge is, you know, not losing the identity that's made the party what it is, but yet not in control. I think it's fair to say, at least, again, at the primary level and certainly at the level of elected officials. 625 here on News Radio 92.3. John Pickens has traffic on the fives. John?
That's right. Still rolling accident-free, even delay-free. I-10, I-110, Highway 90, 98, all the way through. Navarre's looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. Somebody texts in at 437-1620. Mark texts in, Trump was a third-party candidate forced to run in a two-party system. I'd agree. In fact, he was a Democrat most of his life, right? You know, okay. And he even said, I'll pay anybody that helps me get stuff done. You know, so to label him as a conservative would be a mistake. Oh, absolutely. This is why it's amazing to me that some of the people who you might have thought were ideological conservatives or conservative Christians, you know, just kind of threw over and said, Hallelujah, Trump, which is still befuddling to me for a lot of folks. People who would otherwise, I think, have a lot of questions. He's not a conservative. He does align with certain conservative things, and he's certainly done more for, you know, Israel. He's done more for on the abortion front, for the Supreme Court. He's done in border control, a lot of things that, you know, conservatives, you know, military stuff, you know, controlling NATO. Again, I can come off a little bit as an anti-Trump, I know, because, you know, there's a lot of things that I criticize him for, but he's done a lot of things right, too. And it's important to recognize that. And, one of the things I appreciated about Mike Pence, I mean, a lot of things, right? One of the things I appreciated about Pence is he was eager to say that. I mean, this is a guy who, you know, depending on what version of the narrative you believe, you know, President Trump was, you know, inciting a mob that, you know, maybe had on their mind that they wanted to do in the vice president at the time. Remember how this was bad January 6th, right? But still, after it all, Pence is like, no, I mean, he's done a lot of great things. And we have a lot of concerns.
Look, I think the second Trump administration has got a lot right. They got the border secured after the worst border crisis in American history.
That's true.
They extended those Trump-Pence tax cuts that we passed in their entirety. They've stood without apology for our cherished ally Israel and took the fight directly to Iran. But on other instances, you've seen the impact and the embrace by the president and people around him of the politics of the populist right, price controls on credit cards and pharmaceuticals, nationalization of American businesses, of course, broad-based tariffs on friend and foe alike. Add to that marginalizing the right to life, doing nothing about the broad distribution of the abortion pill by mail that Joe Biden's administration made possible. And then the stops and starts on Ukraine, while they've been strong on Israel, strong with Iran, the stops and starts reflect more the politics of the progressive left and appeasement than that time-honored conservative agenda that's defined our party at home and abroad.
And I would also say the question of whether it is ends only that matters or whether means also matter, you know, balance of powers, concerns about constitutional limitations, constraints on executive power, things that clearly chafe President Trump and have chafed other presidents, too. I mean, don't mistakenly think that suddenly this is the first president who wishes he had more power. But there's, you know, almost no indication that President Trump really respects any limitations on his power. If you are with him, you're the best person ever. And if you criticize him in any way, then you're the enemy. You're evil. You're terrible. You're a no good Nick, you know, whatever. So that sort of balanced view of Trump by Pence to me represents rational conservatism, the sort of unbalanced with me or you're my enemy. I don't know, demagoguery represents the Trump wing of the party. And that's why they'll say, oh, you're anti, you know, you've got Trump derangement syndrome. No, I mean, you know, I just think that the man makes mistakes and does right things. But you can't see the distinction between somebody who's sort of your friend or votes for a man three times and still is willing to criticize him in public. 6:29 on News Radio 92.3. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning. Seven people, including a gunman, have died after a string of shootings in Iowa. Police say this happened in Muscatine yesterday. That's a small little town real close to my hometown. Officers located a suspect, a 52-year-old man. Apparently, they found four victims in a home and then two people at other locations. Horrible story. Secretary of State Marco Rubio testifying before both the House and Senate on Tuesday. Rubio going before two different committees. He'll testify about his department's 2027 budget request as peace talks with Iran remain at a standstill.
All right, very good, David. Thank you so much. Coming up next, we might talk a little bit about AI. Get ready to be inspired or other things. Also, the tax proposal that is working its way through Tallahassee. What would it mean for you?
Fox News, I'm Gianna Gelosi. It's primary day in six states today. All eyes are on California, where President Trump endorsed conservative commentator Steve Hilton for governor.
There are more than 60 hopefuls in the governor's race, including Hilton and fellow Republican Riverside County Sheriff Chad Bianco, and Democrats, including billionaire Tom Steyer, former Congresswoman Katie Porter, and former Health and Human Services Secretary Javier Becerra.
That's Fox's Kristen Goodwin. President Trump was able to de-escalate the ongoing conflicts between Israel and Hezbollah, getting on the phone with both sides. The call with the prime minister was reportedly heated.
Axios reports the call between Trump and Netanyahu was tense, saying in a piece posted yesterday, quote, summarizing Trump's remarks to Netanyahu, the U.S. official said, you're effing crazy. You'd be in prison if it weren't for me. I'm saving your A.
That is Fox's Trey Hinkst reporting from Tel Aviv. America is listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 6:31 at News Radio 92.3. Right now we've got 72 degrees. It is partly cloudy. We'll get a look at our forecast here in a few minutes. Well, the city of Pensacola says it's making headway on three separate efforts to address homelessness. The police department's community response specialists have had nearly 1,700 interactions with homeless residents since the program started in 2023. They say they've now placed more than 300 people into shelters or housing. A $100,000 city investment in Children Home Society's Hand Up for Youth program has already helped 21 young people get stable housing, exceeding their original goal. And a pallet shelter program that's run with Reentry Alliance Pensacola has now grown. Originally, it was only 14 units. It's up to 27 units now. The city says that No city could solve homelessness alone, but partnerships are the best chance at making any real difference. Well, an update on the West Bogia Road collapse we learned about yesterday. The Florida Department of Transportation says the damaged section of road actually falls within the state right-of-way, so they are taking responsibility for repairs. FDOT says crews are gathering materials, including a large drainage pipe, and they hope to begin work by the end of the week. The road is expected to be closed for at least a few weeks. In the meantime, residents have a lengthy detour with the nearest paved alternate route running more than 13 miles. Well, hurricane season may have just begun yesterday, but researchers in South Florida are now already focused on the next storm. At the University of Miami, engineers are studying how hurricane force winds and storm surge work together to damage homes and infrastructure. Professor Landolph Road Barbagos says that understanding that interaction is the key.
The shock that the structure receives from the waves is very important and sometimes so devastating that we say that small waves of 3 or 4 feet high can break down a small house.
And the research is aimed at helping communities get better prepared for future storms as forecasters predict another active hurricane season in the future. Escambia deputies are still looking for a suspect after a bank robbery yesterday at the PNC Bank on Fairfield Drive. The suspect was last seen running on South Dakota Street. The sheriff's office posted photos of that suspect online. Of course, if you have any information, call 911 or the Escambia Sheriff's Office with that. Florida lawmakers have amended Governor DeSantis's property tax cut plan before scheduled floor votes today. The biggest change, school district levies are now carved out of the proposal, meaning the exemption increase would not affect school funding. Under the revised plan, the homestead exemption would rise to $150,000 in 2027, $250,000 in 2028. Local governments, of course, are still projected to lose billions in revenue. Some Republican senators have raised concerns that the proposal is moving too fast. If the full legislature approves it today, Florida voters would decide on the measure in November. It's 6:35 at News Radio 92.3. John's got our traffic.
Well, we're still looking good this morning. I'm not seeing any accidents or delays to slow you down. Everything is flowing smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
We will have a 50% chance of those showers and thunderstorms, especially this afternoon. High near 90 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 71. For Wednesday, mostly sunny skies, high near 83. Wednesday night, temperatures dropping near 68. Heading into Thursday, mostly sunny skies, high near 82. And Thursday night, temperatures dropping near 70 degrees. Stay connected, Channel 3 News First Warning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
And right now we've got partly cloudy skies. It is 70 degrees in Pensacola, 71 in Gulf Breeze, and 70 in Milton. Our next news at 7, breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
Paul Murray with your money now. Marvel Technology shares have surged 25% this morning after NVIDIA CEO Jensen Huang said the tech giant could be the next trillion-dollar company. NVIDIA recently invested $2 billion in the chipmaker and other firms designing photonic technology. Treasury yields fell this morning as President Trump's announcement of a ceasefire between Iran-backed Hezbollah and Israel bolsters investor sentiment. The yield on the 10-year U.S. Treasury fell more than 4 basis points to 4.435%. Blackstone said it has raised $13.1 billion for its latest Asia private equity fund, marking its largest PE fundraise in the region. Blackstone said it has invested more than $7 billion across 12 deals in Asia over the past 24 months, reinforcing its presence in key markets, including India and Japan. Futures are slightly lower after another record-setting session on Wall Street yesterday. Dow futures down by more than 100 points. Yesterday, the Dow gained 46, the NASDAQ up 114. That's your money now.
From the FIFA World Cup to competitive business environments, grand ambitions lead to game-changing achievements. At Bank of America, we're there to support businesses at every step, providing insights and expertise to help you gain an edge.
He shoots! He scores!
What would you like the power to do? Explore winning business solutions at bofa.com/gamechangers. Bank of America, official bank of the FIFA World Cup 2026.
Join the Great Southern Restaurant Group, home to the Fish House, Jackson's, Angelina's, and Five Sisters, tomorrow at 9 on the Pensacola Expert Panel. They'll be discussing ABC at the Fish House, featuring Rollins Distillery, Juneteenth at Five Sisters, Beer Festival, Father's Day, and Dinner with Strings Attached at Jackson's Steakhouse, featuring the Pensacola Symphony, all tomorrow at 9 on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Pump up the volume.
Business moves fast. Orders roll in, deadlines close in. When you ship with USPS Ground Advantage, you can keep up with confidence. Every package stays in our secure network from dock to door. And with nationwide reach, dependable tracking, and upfront affordable pricing, you get built-in peace of mind. You run the business. We run the routes. Visit USPS.com/Ground Advantage to learn more.
Here are the News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 contest rules. You can win one prize per household per contest in any 30-day period, unless specified by individual contest rules. All prizes on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 are non-transferable, non-redeemable for cash, or exchangeable for any other prize. News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 prizes must be redeemed within a 30-day period of winning. For a complete list of rules, visit newsradio923.com.
Planning your vacation?
Chris, what do you want to go on a vacation?
Why not take Pensacola right now with Chris and Austin with you?
We're going to go to the beach.
No, take News Radio along via the app.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Just go to your app store, search News Radio 92.3, download the app.
That's good.
And listen to Pensacola's news leader with crystal clarity wherever you go.
And it's absolutely free.
That's really good.
Get it now and tap the app to get News Radio 92.3 no matter where in the world you are.
As you can see, we've had our eye on you for some time now, Mr. Anderson.
No 9000 computer has ever made a mistake or distorted information.
You and Nexus, huh? I designed your eyes.
My CPU is a neural net processor, a learning computer.
Shall we play a game?
We shall not, Whopper. We shall not. Okay, so latest stories in the tech AI world. Literary Dust Up, prize-winning short story, shows how difficult it will be for the book world to handle suspected cases of AI in the future, because writers might use it. In The Atlantic, Vahini Vara, The Controversy of the Serpent in the Grove by Trinidadian writer Jameer Nazir, which won a regional Commonwealth Short Story Prize published in Granta. Online readers gleefully pointed out what they saw as giveaway tics, you know, inappropriate, ill-fitted habits. Tics comes from the world of, autism, I suppose, but from Tourette's, you know, the eye movements and sounds and things. Anyway, including strained metaphors and formulaic rhythms, the AI detection tools concluded that a bot wrote the story, not Nazir. In the aftermath, two other prize-winning stories by Malta's John Edward DeMacaulay and India's Sharon Arupayayan were similarly flagged. That's not the controversy. The controversy is that this time, instead of fessing up and apologizing, none of them have apologized or admitted anything. The Indian, in fact, has publicly denied it. The other two have not responded. Knowing that detection platforms are fallible, proving AI use isn't as simple as proving, say, plagiarism from another author's work. Writers could be discovering an enforcement loophole. So just deny it. We don't even know whether it was AI or human, and you can't prove that it was AI because maybe the AI identifying that it was AI got it wrong. And so the authors aren't even admitting when they get caught. I need to come plagiarizing. I need to work. There needs to be a way to say it. There needs to be, and I'm going to work on that a little bit. So that's story one. Story number two, you ready? This one's worse. That one's not so bad. That's just a warm-up. That's an appetizer. That's a shrimp cocktail, you know, toasted ravioli, okay?
Thanks for the food reference.
Not to make you hungry at 6:40 in the morning. All right, here's the rough one. So two economists, professors at U.S. universities, set out to show how easy it is to industrialize the habit in any science, a bad habit in a science, of creating a theory after you have the data. Okay, so you know the way science is supposed to work. You come out with a theory or a hypothesis, then you conduct experiments to try to disprove that hypothesis. You might mistakenly think that the purpose of experiments is to prove the hypothesis. No, the science doesn't prove things. Science disproves things. Anything you can't disprove is thought to be true. The harder you've worked to disprove it and the longer it's taken to fail to disprove it, the more true it is. Science never validates things. Science disproves things. It's a common misunderstanding that people have, but it's okay. I'm teaching. Yes, I'm here for you. Okay. A little history of science and philosophy. Anyway, so they set out to just show how easy it is to do what science shouldn't do, which is take the data you already have and then build a theory that fits it. But you understand why that's tempting. Because if your theory looks back at existing data and fits the data, woohoo, I'm smart. Woo-hoo. But science is supposed to be predictive and it is supposed to be critical, and it is supposed to look for the flaws. So what they did, and they did this on purpose as a way of showing how powerful and dangerous AI can be, is they looked at a bunch of economic data, and they had the AI look at a lot of economic data, and large language models are capable of synthesizing a massive amount of data, way more than any human can ever synthesize. And so then they gave it a whole bunch of this data, pulled accounting information on publicly traded U.S. companies, two major databases, a whole bunch of things, and they had them mathematically construct 31,000 potential signals. A signal would be an action in accounting where the numbers, the ratios, the dividends, the balances, any kind of number you can think of for measuring a business's performance. They looked at 31,000 different signals that might indicate this happens now, we should buy or sell the stock, essentially, okay? Whether the company is going to do well or do poorly. The vast majority of those signals did not bear out any, you know, didn't show to be any connection with actual performance, not reliably. And then they ran through an increasing series of statistically strict tests, and they filtered the original pool of, you know, 31,000 down to 95 signals. So out of 31,000 possible indicators of business future behavior, these 95 actually did have some statistical validity to them. And then they, so that's 0.4%. So that's a very low number, which is kind of good. That means they screened out a lot. With those 95, they then came to the AI and said, okay, write 4 different academic papers explaining how these 95, one of these 95 works, and give us 4 different papers, 30 pages each, cited professional publication standards. So you're giving us like as if 4 different research teams were writing for all 95 of these things. So they produced 380 papers. It took them about a day to produce 380 seems like journal publication standard level economic explanations of how businesses can be predicted based on this data. Now, it's retrospective rather than prospective, but it shows the point. These could probably get published. They didn't publish them. And by the way, it's great information. They've basically did a meta study of all of the economic indicators for anything for a company, and they came up with 95 possible predictors, and they came up with 4 different interpretations of the theory that would underpin each of those 95 predictors. And here you go. It's a massive amount of information and perspective. And when they compared theirs against 220 signals that had been published, you know, they had 95, 212, in actual peer-reviewed journals, they were indistinguishable in performance. Yay! Now that seems like a really good thing, except if you're like an academic who's trying to make a living synthesizing information and making predictions and, you know, doing science. Also, it contributes to a thing called citation inflation, because 380 papers written by AI, each of those papers refers to different sources that the AI gathered and harvested from in order to produce its citations. So counting citations is a way you can measure the influence, effectiveness, value, validity of different things. And so a paper that gets cited a lot is sort of a better standard to refer to than a paper that doesn't get cited. Well, if AI is out there creating sort of fabricated citation numbers through this process, what's to prevent people from deliberately doing that? You know, kind of like bots on Instagram. Do they really have 200,000 followers, or do they have 10,000 followers and 190,000 Russian bots? You know, like that kind of problem. So, yeah. Happy days. Just telling you what's going on in the world. John Pickens has traffic on the fives. John?
Thanks, Andrew.
Yeah, happy Good times. Morning. Happy times.
All right, so no accidents to report to you right now, but if you're on 9 Mile Road westbound approaching I-10, expect just a 3 to 4 minute delay. That's the only thing I'm seeing so far this morning. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. If you've got a kid who's struggling with math, or maybe they did fine at math, but, you know, it's summer and you want to prevent them from falling behind over the course of the summer, what they call the summer slide. About half of students lose roughly 2 months of math skills. So instead of going back to school in August or September, as, you know, June or late May graduates, they're basically going back to where they were in March. and they have to recover that 2 months. Well, a different way to look at it is if you go to Mathnasium and get involved in their program, you can actually take advantage of the summer and not just maintain, but look ahead, leap ahead, and get ready with new skills. You know, catch up, keep up, and get ahead. The way it all starts is with a completely free assessment. You just take basically a test. Okay, don't let me scare you with that, but you take a test so they can figure out what the kid knows, what they don't know, what gaps there might be in their skill set, and then custom tailor a tutoring program built around helping them get better or continue to be quite good at math. We're big believers in Mathnasium. My son taught there. Our best friends own the Mathnasium here locally. And so we absolutely believe in this program. It's great. It's Mathnasium located next to Marshall's in the Fresh Market Shopping Center at 9th and Airport.
If my dog Ginger could speak English, you'd hear her say she wants to spend every day at Play and Stay Pet Daycare while I'm at work. Good thing I can translate doggy. What's that? They're the only pet daycare in Pensacola with an on-site veterinarian? That's right. She says they're cage-free with large indoor and outdoor play areas where she loves to play with her friends. Where are they located? Play and Stay Pet Daycare is located at 4220 Davis Highway, across from Bailey's Farmers Market, online at olivebranchpethospital.com. Okay, come on, let's go. Good girl.
Hurricane season begins June 1st, but preparation starts now. Florida's severe weather season is underway, and the same steps that help you prepare for hurricanes, making a plan, gathering supplies, and staying informed, also help protect you during severe weather today. For simple step-by-step guidance, visit floridamakeaplan.com. One plan can help you prepare for many storms. Brought to you by the Florida Division of Emergency Management, the University of Florida, and the Florida Association of Broadcasters.
Why'd I go to the doctor? Working on the farm, my heart kept skipping a beat. I didn't think much of it, but my daughters made me get checked out. Turns out I have atrial fibrillation, which increases the risk of stroke about 5 times.
Symptoms like irregular heartbeat, heart racing, chest pain, shortness of breath, fatigue, or lightheadedness can come and go. But if it's AFib, the risk of stroke remains. If you have symptoms, contact a doctor.
I'm so glad I did.
Visit notimetowait.com. Sponsored by Bristol-Myers Squibb and Pfizer.
Bands on the Beach, presented by the Santa Rosa Island Authority, every Tuesday night at 7 at the Gulfside Pavilion on Pensacola Beach. It's hot in the summer, but you can bring a blanket or a lawn chair and relax and enjoy the sunset with your favorite bands. This week, it's Cadillac Willie, and their influences include classic rock and jam bands like Widespread Panic, Lynyrd Skynyrd, the Allman Brothers, and the Grateful Dead. Cadillac Willie also enjoys playing funky tunes by folks like James Brown, Stevie Wonder, and the Funky Meters. It's Cadillac Willie, this week at Bands on the Beach.
When storms pop up fast, it helps to already know where to go.
We've got all the details.
News Radio 92.3. 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Put that coffee down. Coffee's for closers only.
She's coming down. Good morning, 651, News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Okay, you can keep the coffee, even if you're not a closer. So the property tax drama unfolding in Tallahassee is kind of interesting. One, you know, yesterday we were speculating that because a House bill had not been filed, maybe the House would just gavel in and gavel out, you know. It's kind of weird because Ben Albritton is, they've got a budget passed in the Senate, so he doesn't really have any power anymore. And Danny Perez, you know, passed a budget in the House, so they don't really have any power anymore. That, you know, the budget is where a lot of the power comes from, right? Because that's, you can really reward or punish or shape things. Anyway, so it's not really Danny or Ben's fight anymore, even though they are the legislators. So it's more kind of the next round of leaders in the Senate and in the House. And the question had been, because they have not done so really so far at all, would the Senate do what DeSantis wants, or would the Senate do something different? Well, the Senate filed amendments. That means that they disagreed with DeSantis. And their amendments were not insubstantial. For they stood up to DeSantis, which they hadn't really done. The amendments, one of them took the property tax, the bill that DeSantis had proposed, basically. And you know how it would have included your increased your homestead exemption to 150, then to 250, and from then on, kind of on its way up. Well, that was, and for all ad valorem, school and regular, like county, city, everything else. Well, they carved off the school part. So whatever you would have gotten if it passed in the, you know, vote in November, whatever you would have gotten, you're now only going to get half that much, because roughly, I mean, it's actually a little less than half, depends on whether you live in the city. Everything's a little bit different, but roughly your county is about the same as your school board. you know, in both counties, it's in the six vicinity. And again, remember, a mill means that you take the however many 100,000 your home is worth, you just drop the 1,000, multiply by six, and that's your annual property tax for that slice. So a $300,000 home, 300 times six, $1,800 for the school board, $1,800 for the county. I mean, very, very roughly. Okay, these are ballpark numbers, but so you know how to do it. I've taught this before. I will teach it again. John, math on the radio sometimes is okay, right?
Yes.
Okay. Anyway, so the school board part has gone away, so you're not going to get a cut to your school board taxes. Now, the reason for that is largely because if they cut the school taxes, then somebody's got to fund the schools, and that was going to be the state. Because the state legislature knew that if they cut the school funding, they'd have to pay for it somehow else, and they don't have the money to pay for it. So they're going to leave, they're going to take that cut out. Meanwhile, you cut the city and the county, and guess who pays for that? Well, not the state, so who cares? That's the uncharitable view. The charitable view is that states and cities, counties and cities have gone up dramatically in their spending, and they're trying to get that under control. But it's a way for the state legislators to look good without suffering any of the costs, because they don't have to make the cuts to roads, public safety, EMS, you know, or any of the other things that money gets spent on at the city and the county level. It's up to city and county. You're going to have to do that. Yes, John?
So that's the Senate bill, right? Did the House take up the Senate bill?
Oh, yeah. The House basically took it up and said, cool. And they haven't voted on it out of the floor, but it's going to be basically that bill. Yeah, okay. This is the bill that's going to go through. There was a $5 million advertising budget. I call it advertising. It was meant to send out trim notices to everybody before the election to tell you, here's what you're paying now in property taxes, and here's what you're going to pay. Which I consider that to be an advertising budget for the passage. $5 million, that got taken out. I'm sure DeSantis is furious about that. There was also a state backstop safety net fund for counties that have very high home residence property tax rates but don't have a lot of businesses. And so this is going to hit them more because a bigger share of their income from ad valorem comes from residences, which the homestead is going to eliminate all of that. There was also, and this is very important, the original bill, actually, let me take a quick break. I'll get to traffic on the fives. John Pickens, go ahead, John.
Brought to you by Florida West. Did you know that economic development is about building our economy for all current and future residents? Presented by the Florida West Economic Development Alliance. Still rolling accident-free, even delay-free. That's going to slow you down so far. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. So the original version that DeSantis wanted would have said the following. These are the only allowable uses for city and county taxes, okay? Now, if they generate it from, a fee, that's different. But if they generate it from ad valorem, from your regular property value taxes, it could only be used for funding the operations administration of county, for public safety and, you know what, I didn't put the original, hold on just a second, I can find it because I kept it open for exactly this reason. Provide for public safety, including law enforcement, fire service, and emergency medical service, EMS. Provide funding for education, public schools. Finance or refinance infrastructure, including road, bridge, construction, maintenance on stormwater. Finance or refinance natural resource projects, including flood control measures. Issue local bonds for use consistent with this paragraph and to make debt service payments for existing obligations. Meet obligations for retirement benefits of local government employees. Those were the things you were allowed to do. And then here's line G. This is important to understand. Line G said, fund the operations and administration of county officers and commissioners established under Article 8, Section 1, except those expenditures prohibited by general law. And that didn't really add anything to it, but it did. This list is sort of a only this stuff list. So you're going to cut property tax revenue dramatically, or if you prefer to say it, cut your property taxes dramatically. And you're also going to limit what government can spend the money on to only these things. Well, the amendment that went through yesterday basically rendered G into a anything you want fund, which I actually agree with that. I think that the cuts are so dramatic that you really have to give property, or you have to give the power to the county and the city to do whatever makes sense to them, and then you will elect people appropriately. It says those things and the expenditures approved by such county officers or county or municipal governing bodies, except those prohibited by law, meaning anything they vote for. That gutted the restriction. So that part I like. I think this is probably going to pass off the floor and off the House and the Senate today. I think that, you know, the governor doesn't have to sign it. It goes straight to the ballot, and we're going to vote on this. And we're going to have a real conversation about what you want out of your government. And here's the thing. The state can vote to eliminate it, and locally we might not want it, but we get it. Or the state can vote not to, even though locally we might want it. I actually think it would make more sense to do this county by county. Let each county decide for itself whether it wants, you know, no property taxes or a big homestead exemption or something like that. But that's not the way this is going to play out, I wouldn't think. I also kind of wonder, what would the millage rate be if individual voters voted on it directly? I think that would be an interesting question, because we don't. We vote on people who then vote for it. And then you have the question about, what about MSTU? Well, if it's based on the property tax of your home, that's wiped out too. That's affected directly by this. So that's kind of where we are. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning. It is primary election day in six states. Voters are headed to the polls to decide U.S. House, Senate, and governor races. Ballots being cast today in Iowa, Montana, New Jersey, New Mexico, South Dakota, and California. The big Los Angeles mayor race has garnered a lot of attention there. Russia launched a big, massive overnight missile and drone attack across Ukraine yesterday, killing 18 people, injuring more than 100. And AI startup Anthropic has filed for a proposed initial public offering. The company said Monday that it confidentially submitted paperwork. After a recent round of private funding, its overall valuation was $965 billion.
All right. Thanks so much, David. Oh, somebody says, what is the replacement for this funding? Oh, no replacement offered.
Listen on air.